Hello and welcome to the Irish NFL Show. My name is Shane Brennan and thank you very much for joining us today. And I'm very excited to speak to Scott Pioli, a man who needs little introduction, but I think what is probably most relevant to our conversation today is the time he spent as Vice President of Player Personnel at the New England Patriots. Scott, it's fantastic to have you on. Thank you very much for taking the time out. I imagine with this new Dynasty series that's come out on Apple TV that you've had a lot of reaction and a lot of interaction with friends and family recently.
Yeah, with friends, family, and media folks like yourself reaching out. And there's no way I was going to... I love your guys' show. I love all that you produce and all that you do and put out there. So I was not going to pass this up. But yeah, it's been... You know, it's funny, I was on Good Morning Football this morning on NFL Network, like I am every Tuesday, and for the first time there, that one of the questions came up. And it's been, you know, moments of it have been incredibly enjoyable, right? Going back to that time, because as I mentioned, we were kids. You know, by the time the first four episodes goes through this time, I wasn't even 40. I was 39 years old, and we had won three world championships. And that part was really good. But then, you know, as the show shows, there was also a lot of disappointment, a lot of noise. You know, I can never explain to people the sadness and the hurt and the pain of going 18-1. You know, Shane, it's crazy because, you know, I was with the Atlanta Falcons when we lost the Super Bowl, we're up 28-3 and then lost to the Patriots. I had, you know, gone to the Falcons, and people say, oh my gosh, that must have been the worst. That must have been awful. There's this recency bias that people have. And I'm like, yeah, that was really bad. That was a kick in the gut for sure. But let me tell you what was really bad, going 18-1. So again, this whole series has been fascinating just for so many reasons, Shane. It really has been.
Yeah, and I was going to start with the 2001 season, like the series did, but you mentioned there in the 2007 season when the Patriots played so fantastically well throughout the regular season, you know, had the chance to really make history, but sort of fell short at the final hurdle against the New York Giants. And I guess I just wanted to try and dig into that a little bit because,
yeah,
obviously, you know, you were doing your job well and trying to help to really set up a very strong team, but when the loss happened and you could see what was happening. Teddy Bruschi talked about the fact that he could see on the Giants sideline, the fact that they felt like they were the team of destiny in that particular game. You know, when that happened, what was the, how deep did the, I guess, despair go across the team?
It was brutal. It was, you know, Teddy is interesting because Teddy is one of my all time favorites for so many reasons. And part of it is his thoughtfulness and his intelligence, and the fact that he had that clarity of mind during that moment. I didn't have any clear thoughts like that. It was just, it was devastating. It was devastating. You know, the good news is, you know, that we had three before that. So there was so much more positive before we got to that 18-1 season and so much more to enjoy from, from the documentary. But again, I wasn't in that moment. I certainly wasn't as lucid in terms of being thoughtful, where I was thinking, oh, good for the Giants. Maybe they were the team of destiny. You know, I wasn't ready to be that kind. Not that Teddy was kind. I'm sure. I know Teddy. He is so emotional, and I know he was incredibly upset. But, you know, he had lived through what they were living through. So that was it is really a good moment in the film.
And as time passes, do you feel a little kinder to the Giants' point of view in that game, the way they felt, or is it still, you know?
No, I mean, I respect them, without a doubt. Coach Coughlin and so many of the people in that organization. And the crazy part is I grew up a New York Giants fan. I'm from New York, and I grew up a Giants fan. And the only time I ever rooted against the Giants was, you know, every time we lined up against them, whether I was when I was with the Browns or the Ravens or no matter what team I was with. No, I don't feel any more kindness towards them and say, oh, isn't that great that they got that? I don't think Teddy feels any kindness towards them either. That's not how competition works. However, I have enormous respect for what they accomplished, how they did it. The game plan that Steve Spagnuolo had for us that day, the way that Michael Strahan and Osu Umenyora and all of those players played that day, it was exceptional. So I respect it. They were without a doubt the better team that day because they won. And do I feel warm and fuzzy about it? Heck no.
No. Probably no, nor should you either. And like you said, that's the nature of competition. You want to win, and history was there. And look, I think that year the Patriots will still be remembered as one of the great teams. But I want to, I guess, go back a little bit to when the Patriots were seen as the team of destiny. Of course, it was a big thing for a team with the Patriots name to, you know, to be called the Patriots, to win so soon after 9/11, which I think builds up to the emotion of that year. But obviously the big thing was the whole Brady versus Bledsoe quarterback controversy, which kind of came up out of nowhere. And I was talking on this show a couple weeks ago, as trying to, obviously now as we're sitting here, it's seen as sort of masterstroke because of how well the Tom Brady has done in his career. You know, and I took a lot of courage from you and from Bill and from everybody within the Patriots organization to really stick with Tom Brady after Drew Bledsoe came back from his injury. But was there ever a moment, and the documentary really zeroes into the game where I think Tom Brady threw two or three picks against St. Louis in Foxborough Stadium. Was there ever a moment where you were like, I don't know, I think maybe we might have made a wrong decision here?
I don't think there was, you know, because we were committed to it. And we had spent, remember, Tommy sat the bench for an entire year. We saw not only how he progressed, how he had gotten better, but we also knew that there was a, you know, it wasn't pour water on him after 1 year and he blossomed into, you know, this great thing. There's always going to be lumps along the way. I mean, he also had a game where I think he threw four interceptions in the Denver game that year. And, you know, that's part of what comes with it. If you're going to truly develop a player and you've committed to that, you have to continue to believe in the things that made you, make such a difficult decision. And again, I don't remember anyone ever wavering on whether or not we made the right decision or not. We made the decision, we moved on. That's how we're moving forward. You know, going back though, I do look at Drew with a great deal of gratitude because, you know, he came back, and without Drew, we don't win the AFC championship game, you know, against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he, you know, his role had changed and he served his role. And again, it went back to where the team was bigger than anything. I think Teddy Bruschi articulates that and talks about that. But there was never a time, Shane, where we, again, questioned it. We just knew that there were going to be lumps along the road. And that's part of what comes with player development. Heck, you know, it comes with coaching development. It comes with GM development. You know, you're going to make mistakes. If you start reacting and overreacting impulsively to specific moments, then you didn't believe in your plan in the first place.
Yeah, it's just, I look back at it and I just think that it's remarkable, because I can't imagine, for example, that the Cincinnati Bengals would ever sideline Joe Burrow for any reason, despite the fact that he got given the you know, this huge contract. And at the time, of course, Drew Bledsoe was the Patriots' $100 million man. So I think it's, you know, in hindsight, there is often a fine line between genius and catastrophe, and this was a stroke of genius. But was there ever a pressure from within? I know there was a lot of media pressure to I guess reverse the decision, but was there ever any pressure from within to, you know, maybe reconsider Drew?
Well, here's what happens in situations like that. You know, I'll say this, Robert Kraft and his family, Jonathan particularly, who was very involved with the organization, you know, they don't need to say anything. You know, when you do these jobs, when you're the head coach, when you're the one of the coordinators, when you're the GM, when you're the VP of player personnel or whatever the title is, when you're in the leadership group and you make decisions like that, people don't need to remind you or tell you, you better get this right. That didn't happen. There was never anything like that, because you know that this is a meritocracy. And if you don't figure it out and you don't make the right decisions, you're fired. That's the way it is. So, you know, Robert wasn't that kind of leader where he, you know, had to sit there and say, hey, you better get this right, or remind us. You know, he didn't remind us after the same. That's not how our culture was. Maybe there's some owners out there that are like that. Maybe there were doubters. But, you know, the folks that would act and behave and maybe think that way and be, those people don't usually last very long if they're whispering in corners about woulda, coulda, shoulda.
That's fair. I'm going to move on now to, I think, the the two Super Bowl wins that kind of completed what was the original dynasty in Super Bowls, I think 38 and 39. Yeah. The players talk about, and you've read in the book, you've seen it around, the fact that you go from the great win in the first Super Bowl against St. Louis, where the Patriots were the underdog, and now they came from the joy of winning to almost the fear of losing really taking over. From your point of view as someone who has to manage player personnel, that really upped the pressure on you to not only find players who were skillful, but find players who had the mental toughness to A, stick with Bill Belichick's program, and B, really survive in and thrive in an environment where winning became the norm?
You know, Shane, first, there's a couple of questions there. So the first one I'll address, I may need you to repost the question, but you know, the first question or the first thought is the fear of losing versus the winning. I think that even before we won a Super Bowl, very often with a lot of athletes and a lot of competitors, a lot of people in general, the fear of losing or the fear of failing is something that's in the back of the mind of every person all the time. So I think as we started to have more success and become more successful, when the stakes seemed higher because there was this new thing out there, meaning is it going to be a dynasty? I think there is this element of relief. And I talk about it, you know, in terms of, you know, sometimes that relief is a stronger feeling than the joy of the success. You know, I talk about it in the context of winning and this game being a narcotic and being addictive. And I think some of the similarity is when you talk to people who have addiction issues, that they get this high, you know, chemically from whatever they're addicted to, and they're forever chasing that high. And they're dealing with, all right, when they get that drink or they get that drug, yeah, it satisfies them momentarily, but they're still, gosh, I got to get that next one because that next one. And there's something to that within this whole crazy competitiveness. And I've talked to a number of people who can relate to it. And so I think that fear of failing and fear of losing is all wrapped up in that feeling of almost addiction of wanting that next championship. And, you know, in terms of talking about those teams in particular, what I do believe about those teams, you know, we won with good talent the first Super Bowl. And I think there were a lot of other teams that were at times maybe more talented than us, but they didn't play as well together as we did. They didn't do a lot of the little things that we did. We did not turn over the ball very often. Yeah, we had penalties, but we did not have key penalties. Not all penalties are the same, and not all turnovers are the same. The time they happen during a game and the impact that they have on the result of the game is different sometimes. I think the other thing is, you know, Bill and the way that he coached and the way his staff was, we were ready, you know, and prepared for situational football better than anyone. Our special teams were good. Our defense was dominant. But as we got to those second and third world championships, our roster was really good. And, you know, Shane, you pointed out something really important, too, I think, is, you know, there were a number of players, not only for the first championship team, but the other championship teams that we brought in that were the right players for us. And when I say that, you know, my job was talent evaluation, talent identification, talent acquisition, and then there's talent development. Well, one of the things I learned in all the years I worked with Bill in Cleveland, but also at the Jets, you know, every leader has some unique elements of their personality and how they lead. One thing that we made sure we did, we were always looking for talented players, but we also wanted to make sure that we were finding players that we felt very strongly would quickly buy into Bill's leadership methods, his leadership culture, and how he did things. So that was a big part of the player acquisition. But as we got to, you know, wins 2 and 3, those rosters were loaded now.
Yeah, and I'm conscious of the time you're taking out to speak to us, Scott, and thank you very much for speaking to us. But one final question I want to ask is, you obviously moved on to become general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs in 2009, I believe I'm right in saying. And in the history of football before the Patriots, no dynasty had ever really spanned two decades. You had the Steelers in the 70s, the Niners in the 80s, kind of the 90s, you know, the Cowboys in between as well. So was there ever a moment around, let's say, after the Super Bowl loss in 2007-2008, where you thought that there might have been a sell-by date on how long the Patriots will be competing for Super Bowls?
No, that had nothing to do with why I left and why I moved on. It was just time for a change. But I didn't think so, because something that had been done within the organization was not only did we build, I talked about talent identification, talent evaluation, acquisition, and then development. Something that we paid attention to within that organization and was part of the plan that Bill and I had was our talent acquisition. As soon as we say that, people think about players only, but we were making sure we were doing it throughout the football operation, where there was a succession plan that when I left, Nick Caserio, Bob Quinn, John Robinson, Jason Light, Monty Ossenford, Brian Flores, those folks were all in the personnel department. B-Flo was actually, in scouting before he was in coaching. And Bill was doing that also on the coaching side. We had developed Josh McDaniels from within. So we had a succession plan. So we really believed and thought that part of our obligation was not only to win now, but to plan for the future, to do something special. That was the goal. And I feel like when I left, I really thought there was a chance, as long as number 12 kept on playing the way that he did, Bill kept on coaching the way that he coached, and there was still a good roster in place, that they had a chance to continue.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that culture of bringing talent in. We see that with Gerard Mayo becoming the next head coach as well. So obviously that is the Patriot way. Scott Pioli, thank you very much for taking the time out. One final thing. We are excited that we were welcoming Peter King over to a live show in Dublin later on this month. I just wondered if you have any words or any memories of Peter over the years.
I absolutely love Peter. Peter is a dear friend. And what's funny is, I met Peter through work. Way back in Cleveland, Bill and Michael Lombardi introduced me to Peter, and I got to know him. And the funny thing is, most of my conversations with Peter at the beginning were, we talked a little bit about football, but I was a slappy, so I didn't have anything to add. So we talked a lot about baseball, and Peter loves baseball. I love baseball. And as our relationship went on years and years later, he was a father of two daughters. I became a father of a daughter, and I would honestly say that 90% of mine and Peter's conversations had to do with being a father of daughters, and baseball. Yeah, we had to talk football every once in a while. So Peter became a very close and dear friend. And the other thing that manifested itself within that relationship was Peter never crossed the line with me in terms of asking things that he knew would be me compromising my relationship with Bill, my relationship with the organization, my relationship with players. He would ask questions, but he never compromised. And Peter and his wife, Ann, are absolutely remarkable people that I not only love and respect, I respect the people that they are and how much they helped in a lot of conversations about trying to understand, being the dad of a daughter that was an athlete too, like Peter and Ann's two daughters were.
Well, that I think it's things like that and the human being behind Peter King which makes him such a legendary character, as well as the legendary column writer. As a newspaper journalist, I don't know how he does it, frankly. Scott Pioli, thank you very much for taking the time out. It's been an honor. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Shane. I appreciate you.